This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 667, September the 17th, 1984. There is no subject that I discuss on these broadcasts that is more important than the subject of war and peace. My studies began 13 years ago when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot by Jack Ruby. I suspected at the time there was a conspiracy right then, and decided to study whether or not the United States government had effected a coup in this country, and if so, what were the motives of those people that were able to take this off, from the president to the Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice Earl Warren, on down through the staff and news media and so forth. How long had they been together, and how did they cover this up? How well were they able to cover it up, and what techniques did they use? By November 1964, I was able to locate the Nazi connections to Lee Harvey Oswald, and then later to the staff of the Warren Commission and to the people writing the Warren Report. And it took 20 years for the view to become more clear, to get it more in focus, of course, every week. Then when I first started out, I had no aid or help or course or way to go about discovery, except a hit and miss, which most of the investigators were doing. Not too many of them in the country, but a handful, 11 or 12, were doing right from the start. And all the various subjects that I've studied and put on the air have gone back and pertain to this original thesis, not original by me, but not commonly known around the United States, around the world yet. It isn't common talk. We talk about the coup in Chile when Allende was killed, Salvador Allende, by the CIA, but it certainly is far from common talk that we had a coup d'etat in the United States when John Kennedy was murdered. Now, I've been on the air 13 years, and I don't think I ever was as affected emotionally, or my gray matter was stirred as much as that broadcast I heard last week that I shared with you on the Today Show, NBC Today Show, where the Soviet leader was speaking. I got his name during the week, Marshal Sergei Akhromeyev, A-K-H-R-O-M-E-Y-E-V. He's the new Soviet chief of staff, and he is the one who said on the Today Show, in quotes, "If the aggressor unleashes a nuclear war, then I believe indeed for mankind, this will be the last war." You can read it, but it isn't the same as when you hear it. That's why I'm on tape and not writing books. I believe that you can say things in your voice that even have a, well, and we know they have a different dimension than when you see it on the printed page. It wouldn't bother me to read that article. I've read many like that, but hearing it did something to the gut level that I knew we were getting very close to the brink. So what I did for this week's program was to put together the rhetoric just the week prior, or a few weeks prior, to what he said. And then the very next day, President Ronald Reagan said that he would meet Mr. Gromyko. He hasn't met any head of the Soviet Union. He's the first president since Herbert Hoover. And there's a reason why, from Herbert Hoover to Ronald Reagan, those two men would not meet with the Soviets. Herbert Hoover was the instigator, if there could be one single person, of arming for World War II, the man, the American, who owned the largest amount of property, forests, oil, minerals, inside Tsarist Russia, who carried on this holy war. The Hoover Institute has been behind Ronald Reagan as governor, as president of the United States, as his chief advisor. And there's a reason why Ronald Reagan was handpicked to speak the words of the deceased Hoover, of Herbert Hoover. And that's why for 50, that gap in there, that every other president was able to meet with representatives from the Soviet Union. Now, the past 2 weeks, I've talked on various aspects of this building up to this particular position that Ronald Reagan had and what forced the Soviet representative to speak the way he did, finally. But I want to go over, as I say, the news preceding that day and afterwards, and I'll rush through some of these articles, and then if I have time, I'll go back over them in detail. But I want to hit most of them now before the tape is up, before the hour is over. So we'll just run them down. And as I say, there are some very interesting phrases in between the main ideas that we'll get to if there is time. I will go back just to August of 1984, August 21st, when the FBI had no information or proof that the letters written about the Ku Klux Klan going after the Olympic athletes, the racist letters, were written, in fact, by the KGB. Now, August the 5th, William French Smith, the Attorney General of the United States, which has no particular meaning when you think of crook John Mitchell and all the other attorney generals lined up, he tried to say that the Soviet Union, the KGB, was sending letters using the names of the Klan to show racism in America to the colored athletes to intimidate them from Africa and so forth. That was a speech that Mr. William French Smith gave at the American Bar Association. A bunch of pimps and whores, if ever there were, they used to have Leon Jaworski, the head of the American Bar Association. We won't talk about him now. But nobody challenged him. So anyway, he on the 5th, he gives this rallying speech, August the 5th, about the Soviet Union sending forged letters, as if you could make the Klan or the American Nazi Party look bad. And he wants to clear them of such a terrible thing by saying the KGB did it. But on the 23rd of August and the 21st, there were two articles, or several that week. The FBI was trying to determine if racial hate mail sent to the UCLA and USC Olympic villages was part of the Soviet KGB effort that William French Smith said was responsible. 33 of these letters were mailed to foreign Olympic officials. Edgar Best, director of the security for the LA Olympics, was under criticism because he did not give the letters to the FBI when they were received. They kept them a month. The FBI said they looked like second-generation letters, purportedly from the Klan to 20 African and Asian countries. I mentioned this action of William French Smith before, several weeks ago, but not in connection with a series of events that followed afterwards. The LA Times says, still unresolved is the question of what happened to the other numerous letters. There were supposed to be 100 letters identical. They weren't turned over. They weren't the originals, like the Oswald Diary that I mentioned. These were copies of. And so far, the FBI can't come with any positive proof, which makes it more than just a letter sent in somebody else's name, because it was presented to the American Bar Association by the Attorney General of the United States. Following August the 21st, George Shultz was speaking in Washington, and he criticized the Soviet domination of Eastern Europe, and he gave a speech that said, "We will never accept the idea of a divided Europe." And the article in the New York Times goes on to say that after the uprisings in Hungary in 1956, the subject was never brought up because of concern about starting a third world war. So from 1956 until 1984, there was concern about the war, but Ronald Reagan doesn't care, and he had Mr. George Shultz telling them that the post-war political setup of Europe is one that they are going to challenge, that they don't accept that. In August of it was August 18th, East Germany lets 33,000 migrate. West German Chancellor Helmut Kohl promised to keep the door open, and he wants the eventual reunification of Germany. His first step was to let 33,000 into Germany, giving East Germany $683 million. The New York Times had a story. This is August the 18th. West Germany accepts the 33,000 to emigrate. The loan of $683 million, is that to buy them? The question I ask, is that to buy these people off? Are these Galen agents, remember the story of Hitler's diary, the staunch Nazi, the Nazi collectors from East Germany, the Waffen-SS? There are many people in Germany, not in the West Germany, in the East Germany, who became, in quotes, communists because the communists run their country. But now they could emigrate, 33,000, and tell the West Germans where the bridges are, where the weapons are located, where the food supplies are, where the roadblocks, and so forth. They allowed 33,000 to go from West East Germany to West Germany, and if 1,000 of those were Waffen SS, and I'm sure there are many, many more, this was a nice price to give. There can be a lot of danger because most of the secrets, so-called secrets, of East Germany would be ready for World War III with these people now at this ripe stage going to West Germany. The next article, I'm doing all of these in consecutive order because that tells its own story. August 22nd, 1984, from the Washington Times. Moscow is wary of German detente. The two Germanies are moving closer. The article said, in addition to $330 million loan this year, West Germany gave East Germany $400 million last year. The Soviets are calling West German Chancellor Helmut Kohl a stooge of the United States, and the West Germans are, in quotes, absolutely stupid, blindly rabid, animalistic, bloodthirsty neo-Nazis with the potential of builders of the new death camps. These are the charges coming out against them. And then the Soviets said that the West German economic credits to East Germany could be a Trojan horse to tear down the communist system by flooding it with cash. That was in the Washington Times, the words about the control of the United States over Germany. And that's when Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles and SS Karl Wolff and that gang merged with Germany. The United States did, in fact, become the Fourth Reich. Another article from the New Times magazine published in the Soviet Union, I quoted part of that article last week. I didn't get into the description of Richard von Weizsäcker. I mentioned him several times on other broadcasts. The new president of Germany, the new federal president of West Germany. And interestingly enough, the New Times is published by the Soviet Union. And they were very kind in their little biography. I wondered why they didn't write more on Mr. Weizsäcker's connections. His father was the Vatican envoy for Adolf Hitler to Italy. He represented the Vatican interests of Adolf Hitler in Rome, from Berlin in Germany to Rome. He was a defendant at the Nuremberg trials. Weizsäcker himself was a soldier in the German army. But what they have in the article in New Times on this Richard von Weizsäcker, there's a picture of him with a little box saying how he went to Oxford University and Grenoble University and gave his credit doctor's degree and so forth. It said in 1956 he joined the Christian Democratic Union, and that his interest was as president of the German Evangelical Church, an assembly on influential religious organizations, part of the West German government. Now, Mr. Reinhard Gehlen, who was Hitler's chief of intelligence east, who set the time bombs for all of this that's going on now, when he retired, in the book Gehlen's By the Century, it tells how Gehlen became head of the Evangelical Church, the German Evangelical Church, and that's where he went. And that, at that time period, was the exact mushrooming of tremendous budgets for the American television Evangelical Church, the people behind the churches on Sundays and during the week, the large ministries, and Pat Robertson. Robertson was a from the 007, I call it the 007 Club because of the spy. The James Bond is not the 900 Club. I never listened to it, but he was a roommate of J. Peter Grace, partner of Otto Ambrose, the manufacturer of Zyklon B at Auschwitz. Now, these churches all of a sudden came into being, and you saw in Dallas with the Republican Convention and currently the influence that the church is going to have over one of our parties, and I mentioned that before on one of the broadcasts. They say that they wanted the Republican Party to become the Christian Party, just as the Christian Democratic Union in Germany. So that Richard von Weizsäcker is not only the president of Germany, but he later became the president in his career one time of the German Evangelical Church, and that is the group that Reinhard Gehlen went to and became active in when he left the BND, which is his equivalent to our CIA, the German intelligence. He just went over, and then the churches escalated with their political clout to take over eventually the White House and the Congress, which they're hoping to do in these next elections. August the 24th, a story from the Washington Post, West Germans disavow the role for the pipe bomb along the eastern border. The United States Army is manufacturing and demonstrating a network of underground pipeline bombs that they would like the Germans to have to experiment with this pipe bomb filled with liquid explosives that could be detonated if there were a war or when the war starts. You let off these bombs. It's like the Maginot Line, only instead of a building above the ground, you have these chemicals. And as the troops come between, they would like to use it between North and South Korea or West and East Germany. When the tanks come, it's an anti-tank system with chemicals and liquid explosives that's detonated before the enemy comes with their armor and you blow it up. Now, the United States is pushing this, but the Germans are turning this down, at least for the time being. And no wonder, they're getting a little nervous. And they said that they have enough American army there right now. They don't want it. They're not really in favor of it. Now, September the 2nd, Soviet President Chernenko sent a written statement to the press in the Soviet Union and to officials in the Soviet Union. This is one quotation from that statement. The Washington Post had the story September 2nd. Chernenko, in written statement, assails the United States position on weapons talks. He said, they in Washington are flaunting with open cynicism their great power ambitions, exaggerated notions about America's role and place in the modern world. Chernenko said they claim the part of being the strongest or ruling the destinies of people and dictating their will to all and everywhere. In brief, they are now talking about a crusade, not only against socialism, but actually against the entire world. Now, the crusade he's talking about is the Odessa, the Nazi network, which Hitler wanted, the Fourth Reich, the Thousand-Year Reich, which is against the entire world. You hear talk about Soviet prisons. You don't hear about Colonia Dignidad. You don't hear about Zia and Pakistan and the cruelties, or the cruelties down in various countries around the world, oppressions that we've put into power. The only enemy is the Soviet Union, and that crusade is to wipe them out. We've been successful in getting rid of democracies in most other countries that we have touched and sent our troops. September the 13th, the American Legion had Ronald Reagan speaking. This was in Utah, and this quotation that I have here is again from the Washington Times. Reagan said, we have completely reoriented American foreign policy with new energy and moral purpose. We must help El Salvador, and we must not desert the freedom fighters in Nicaragua. We need a supreme being, the Lord. He said, it's impossible to face this job without him. I couldn't do it without he told them, without the Lord. And he was speaking in Utah, the Latter-day Saints. And I might remind you that Somoza, that family alone, controlled all of the economy of Nicaragua. And you know the terrible oppressions that went there. And about 14 families own all the land in El Salvador. And recently, Ronald Reagan entertained Mr. Dobison in Washington, who is directly linked to the Nazis, the World Anti-Communist League, the death squads down there. People that want the Somoza army back into power are the freedom fighters in Nicaragua. And this is our moral purpose. And more you'll hear those religious terms. The debate on religion going on in news conferences and television has more to do with the moral purpose and the word crusade that you're going to see and hear than it has to do with abortions. Now, September the 6th, the Los Angeles Times has a story, is the United States trying to bring the Soviets to their knees? This is by Elliot Hurwitz. And it says that the current Reagan policy to worsen Soviet economic problems is extremely risky option, and by no stretch of the imagination could the United States, even with our allies, cause this. He says that we can't cause economic collapse. But the whole, the gist of the article is that the whole purpose of Ronald Reagan's shtick now is to bring the Soviets to their knees. That's what he was put in for, and that's what he's trying to do. The New York Times, this is Friday, September the 7th, says, West Germany is in no hurry to merge. This is an idea that Ronald Reagan has. The people in Germany that were interviewed said that they accept a lot of what's going on. Pravda made a caricature with a cartoon of the word I used a lot last week, revanchism. It says revanchist Chancellor Kohl is plotting to rewrite the post-war borders of Europe and reinstate the German Reich. That's what he wants. But in West Germany, it is borne out by the common polls that people have a sober, skeptical feeling about reunification. This article quotes one particular person said, "We're on the border, but we know the divisions of Germany is the bill we get from Hitler starting the war. We want to be aware of what's going on. We're not blind to what set this up. We're paying our dues," to paraphrase what he said. And interviews in Germany, at least by the New York Times, the average person, and is certainly not wanting to put that explosive wall between the two Germanys, is indicative of how the German people feel. They're not crazy about this idea that has been building up. Now, George Shultz said September the 7th that he would meet Mr. Gromyko at the UN session, but this is a Los Angeles Times story, but he assured everybody at this particular speech that even though this was the first high-level contact in 9 months between the two nations, there is little chance for any breakthrough or dramatic developments as a result of the meeting. In other words, we'll say hello. He walked out of the meeting in Spain of the human rights meeting a year ago because the Soviet Union had downed cold-bloodedly the Korean airline, which 1 year later turns out to be positively, without hardly a shred of a bit of doubt, a spy plane that was blown up knowingly on purpose by the administration, and that is 1 year later. But this contact, Shultz says, I will meet him at the UN. He comes every year, but don't expect anything of it. We don't intend to do anything about it. Now, September the 10th, the San Francisco Examiner and the LA Herald had a story, United States relations lowest ever. The Soviets declared it couldn't be worse, and they complained about the lies that Ronald Reagan is saying. Mr. Reagan has convinced himself and many Americans as well that the United States can and must talk to the Soviet Union only from a position of strength. The choice between universal annihilation and peaceful coexistence and cooperation of states with different systems is still possible, they said. But the way the president is going, there is very little chance to get along. And TASS released a commentary in London, accused the Reagan administration of doing a great deal to disorganize and destroy what was achieved by all the other predecessors. Now, George Shultz came out with a report that Congress was to deliver next week. This is the LA Times, Soviets violating the ABM Pact. The secretary dismissed Mondale's complaint that President Reagan is the first American, this press secretary and the Secretary of State, George Shultz, dismissed it that Ronald Reagan is the first American chief of state in 50 years not to have met his Soviet counterparts. And George Shultz says, I don't see any embarrassment at that at all. He said, pass it off when you consider that those old men are sick and tired and there's nowhere to meet with these people because they're too sick and old. But that's not the point. When they're not sick, and all of them are old, Reagan is old, they could still meet and talk. And that has nothing, their age has nothing to do with the accusations of the Korean airline or the forged letters of the KGB, the outright lies. Even at the time that John Kennedy was killed, the outright lie that, or the hint that Lee Harvey Oswald was a Soviet agent and Marina Oswald's uncle worked for the Soviet intelligence. There is absolutely no excuse for putting things on them that didn't happen. Stick with the issues if they're real, but don't rely on false documents and outright lies. That only weakens our position and makes other people around the world scared to see us. Now, that famous speech of Ronald Reagan's at the microphone test, there were just several items I wanted to quote or articles on that. I have many. One from the Washington Post, Friday, September the 7th. Did Reagan throw a wrench into German détente? And they say that by Reagan opening his mouth and speaking about the possibility of starting a war, the West German meeting planned with the president of the head of the Communist Party from East Germany was called off, that the Soviet Union pulled back, didn't think it was funny. And what this article explains is that Reagan's big mouth, or what he thought was a funny thing to say or do, was really a cause for Germany, for East Germany and the Soviet Union, to reconsider any possible meeting. one article, an editorial in the New York Times, Mr. Reagan bombs. The radio joke is no laughing matter. And one from the Daily World, Reagan's joke not funny to the West Germans. And Stern magazine had a picture of Reagan wearing a clown's nose. And they said that the August 11th voice test before the radio on the bombing starts in 5 minutes was very much a point of anger in Germany. They took polls and 64% questioned, thought his remark had damaged the East-West relationship, that by this kind of talk, the Soviet Union was fully aware or more aware of just Ronald Reagan's intent. They didn't take it as a joke, and therefore any dialogue between these countries was called off when they were looking forward to some kind of a dialogue. Now, Billy Graham went to the Soviet Union to turn them all into Christians last week, but the San Francisco Examiner has one story about Graham. Graham's plea to the Soviets over Reagan's joke. I guess every time he comes and tells them he represents Christ and we're the good people and they're the bad guys, and then they say, well, if you're going to start the bomb in 5 minutes, you know, where's your Holy Father? So Billy Graham tried to explain, and the article says evangelist Billy Graham tried today to mollify the Soviet officials over the indignation of Ronald Reagan's joke about bombing the Soviet Union. In quotes, this is what Graham told them. He was just testing a microphone, and he wanted to make people laugh. It wasn't in his heart. He wanted it to be funny. Well, the Soviet Union responded that they had lost 20 million people in World War II, and this was unacceptable, and they didn't understand how that made people in the United States laugh. He only compounded it by saying, he shouldn't have said anything, but if that makes America laugh, it didn't make the Soviet Union laugh. And then, as I mentioned last week, the head of the Communist Party, Erich Honecker, Honecker, called off the visit to West Germany, something that they had looked forward to for many, many years, to bridge the gap between East and West Germany. The Romanian head of the state, the president of Romania, or the head of the Communist Party, is still going to go there. 99% of the Romanians were sympathetic to the Romanian Iron Guard. This is the area that Mr. Trifiat comes from Otto von Bolschwig. It was well-organized, probably the best-organized, solid area of all Nazis. So when the war was over, that didn't change the Nazis at heart. And we don't know a thing about the president or the head of Romania. He did send his people here to the Olympic Games, and he will go to West Germany. But just as Mr. Weizsacker is now president of West Germany, and his biography certainly is one to be studied, he and his family, for what they are and what they're doing now. Not what they did in the past, but for what they're doing now to world peace, to shake it up. But the point is that the Romanian representative could be exactly of the same group. As a matter of fact, Mr. Weizsacker's father worked with von Ribbentrop and had very close ties in Romania and with that whole group that later worked with the CIA and Senator Joe McCarthy, and have strong links to our Galen intelligence operation. But the Soviet Union has stopped the visit of, they haven't stopped, but I guess they've put their finger down, so the head of the Bulgarian government and the German government, as I mentioned several weeks ago, are not going to West Germany. Now, the Los Angeles Times has a story, September the 9th, whose finger is on the button? And this brings up something that is very important, not only in terms of the constitutional arrangement of war and peace, and I have other articles on the battle going now on who will declare the war, just like they had a meeting on what press will be there when the wars begin, but the mind of the Pentagon and the Defense Department is important in this story. Whose Finger is on the Button was written by Jeremy Stone, September the 9th, 1984. And this is the way it begins. I'll have to interrupt it and turn this tape over in a minute, but I'll just start it. When President Reagan joked about ordering the attacks on the Soviet Union, no one raised the most important issue, his right to make such a decision by himself, were he serious. This issue was not raised because, for four decades, it has been the American policy to give the president the authority to turn conventional hostilities, in Europe, for example, into nuclear war. the issue wasn't raised because we have said that the president can begin a nuclear war. As the general counsel for the Defense Department advised this particular author, with or without a declaration of war, the president has the right to use even strategic nuclear missiles. Any requirement that Congress be involved would have a probable adverse effect on NATO deterrence policy. NATO will take a 1 second to turn this tape over and then continue with the subject of what do they mean, the Defense Department attorneys, that the president alone decides when the atomic bomb does drop. And then